Hi, this is Julie.
This is Liz.
This is Sheila.
This is Monica.
This is Leanne.
We are the Satellite Sisters.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters to Go.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters. Thanks for being with us today. It is Tuesday, May 10th. I'm Leanne Dolan in Pasadena, California. I'm here with my sister, Julie Dolan, who is in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Jewel, how's it going there in Dallas?
It's just great, Leanne. I love the month of May. Happy to be here. Happy to be talking with you today.
You're right. The month of May is a good month.
It is
a lot of happenings. A lot of happenings in May. There's weddings, graduations, first communions, Mother's Day, birthdays, all kinds of excellent
Memorial Day.
We have
a federal holiday in this month. It's good all the way around, Leanne.
Sure. Okay. We're gonna cover quite a bit of ground on the show today. It was the season finale of Madam Secretary, so we are putting our recap into this show right now. So if you listen all the way to the end, you will get the season finale recap of Madam Secretary. Because it was a fantastic episode, Julie.
It really was, Leanne. It sort of blew my mind. That's all I can say.
All right. Also, we have, it's a Tuesday, so you know we're going deep on some shallow topics. We have tidbits and a grandmother pod. So you want to stay tuned.
Just
for that.
Really, you better buckle up, okay?
We have some thoughts on Outlander. And then I would like to take up the case for the Elgin Marbles returning to Greece. And I'm going to tell you why, Julie. That's our actual heavy hitting news story of the week. And it's 200 years old. So we're going to start. Oh, we have Mother's Day.
How was your Mother's Day?
You know what? I had a lovely Mother's Day. It just was very low key. Mainly the two boys were here. And it occurred to me over the next 4 years, my younger son will not be around for Mother's Day because he's going to a school that's on the quarter system. So he won't get home till June. So we just had a nice, relaxing day of spending time together as a family. It was actually really enjoyable. We went to the Rose Bowl flea market and out to lunch, and there were gifts, which is good because some years there are no gifts at my house.
Just cards.
Some years, not even that. Some years, handwritten notes, I'll mow the lawn. You know, that's...
It's so touching. Did you tear up when you got that note, Leah?
I mean,
You probably did, right?
So usually I just get mad. But this, the actual day was great. And then I mentioned last Tuesday on the podcast that I was going to my son's school has a beautiful tradition of a mother's brunch on Mother's Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's an all boys school, but they make a big deal about moms. So they welcome the incoming freshman mothers into the school, and they say goodbye to the outgoing senior mothers. And it's a chance for about a dozen senior boys speak about their experience there. And the whole takeaway is supposed to be, wow, they've really grown up in 4 years. You know, they started is these little skinny freshmen, and all of a sudden they're seniors and they're going off to colleges and they've done all these great things and taken these classes and learned all these things. But Julie, at the end, it's always the highlight. They have a very good theater department at my son's school. So they always have a couple of numbers from the theater kids.
Oh.
They do whatever their show numbers were, whatever they, you know, did during the year, they reassemble and they do a couple numbers. It's a little showbiz way to end it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this year, honest to God, they did Tarzan and A Chorus Line at the school. So this kid started singing that Tarzan song, You'll Be in My Heart Tonight.
Oh,
my God.
Were you all sobbing?
Sobbing.
Sobbing.
People were, it was audible. And most of the senior mothers were sitting right in the front.
We
went early, we snagged our tables. And I mean, I couldn't even look at the poor kid because we were all crying. And then he got choked up. He could barely finish the song. Holy cow. And then some, you know, very talented actor, singer, the beautiful voice sang from A Chorus Line at What I Did for Love. Oh, forget it. It was but women were just at that point, they just had their heads down on the table. It wasn't even worth pretending. So it was a fantastic way to end the brunch. It was really a lovely brunch. And I'm just saying, if you're looking for a way to just reduce all the mothers at your event to tears, sing that song from Tarzan. I had totally forgotten.
I wouldn't have thought of that, Leanne, but that I can see that. That's nice.
Seen...
And you don't care how long the event goes on.
No.
Too, right.
No.
You would have sat there for hours just sobbing.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be very few moments like that. I don't want to get choke you up today, but But there aren't going to be a lot more times where you're going to be able to sit around and like sob about how much you love your son.
Yeah.
Officially, and not get in trouble for it. You
right.
know? So,
right. It was just really, really a nice day. So what, and I was so dehydrated and tired after that. I had to take a nap. We were supposed to go out that night. I never nap. I came home. I'm like, I'm just going to go up to my room and lie down for a little bit.
I know.
So
it's a lot.
It was fantastic.
Oh, well, that's good, Leah.
Yeah.
It was all good here. I had a wonderful Mother's Day. And just a big shout out to the Mansfield Women's Club. Last Thursday, Leanne, I went down there and it's a wonderful group of women, very active in their community. They have a mission to give back to their community and to make friends and support each other in the club. You got to love that. And, you know, we're doing a little book signing at the end. And, you know, one of the things, we have our book out, You're the Best, A Celebration of Friendship. And, you know, I'm sure you see this because I know you do a number of speaking engagements. It's just so fun to hear who people are buying the book for. You know, I love it that they're, you know, buying it for their neighbor, they're buying it for their real sister, they're buying it for their tennis partner, they're buying it for their best friend from grade school, they're buying it for their mother. You know, and I just love hearing who they intend to share the gift with, don't you?
Yeah, they always tell you. These are my five college roommates. Yeah,
sorority sisters.
Exactly.
Yes, I think my bridesmaids, whatever it is. But that was a lot of fun and I enjoyed it. And,
oh, great.
Yeah, it was all good. So, but I got back from Mansfield. That is south of Dallas. Lovely town. But I also, as part of my Mother's Day weekend, I went on a road trip, Leon. Okay. Now you remember when you came to Dallas for the book tour, I was hoping that we could take a side trip to Waco, Texas.
Were trying to talk me into that.
I was talking you into it, but we just didn't have time. We were so busy.
I didn't have any interest. I don't.
Yes, you did. Well, okay. If you weren't interested, you just sit tight. All right. Cause I went with one of my friends, neighbors, a real satellite sister, Anne, who loves road trips. She grew up here in Texas, Leanne, and there's nothing she loves more than to get out on the open road, to go places, to see things, to visit curiosities. I mean, and so she had really researched our trip to Waco. So we knew exactly what we were going to do. And our first stop on the trip was, of course, we wanted to see that Magnolia Mart. Now, you are a viewer of HGTV. And if anyone watches...
I don't know this show, though. Or
you don't
store.
Know this show? You've
no.
never seen it? Okay.
That's why I was not interested in going. I don't know who you're talking about.
Okay. Well, the name of the show is Fixer Upper. Uh-huh. And this is Chip and Joanna Gaines, and they're from Waco, Texas, okay? And what they do is they fix up houses in the Waco, Texas area. And the thing about Chip and Joanna is you like them immediately. Chip is the contractor, and he's just totally goofy and nice. And Joanna seems to be the brains of the operation. She does the design, the overall concept. And she loves everything that Chip does, even though he's a goofball. They have four lovely children, and she totally loves that open concept farmhouse style. And if when she's doing her renovations, if she finds that shiplap behind the walls, she goes out of her mind. She loves that the most of all. So that, and she does these remarkable transformations. And then the other thing about the show, Leanne, is that all the real estate in the Waco area costs under $200,000. So that is always a miracle. You know, that people buy houses for $75,000, yeah. You know, cute couples. All the couples on the show are incredibly likable. You know, so you're really rooting for them. Of course, you're rooting for Chip and Joanna. And one of the things, so they've had the show, and even though you're not watching it, pretty much everyone else in America is watching the show, Leon. It's very popular both with men and with women. So if you want to, you know, in fact, they had a Mother's Day fixer-upper a marathon on HGTV. So okay. You could have caught it then, but you can catch it pretty much anytime. You know,
sometimes it's hard for us in California to watch shows about real estate that cost $75,000. I will be honest. We have like a low price. We have a set price point. Like if we're watching House Hunters and their budget is like $82,000, we don't even watch. Like, cause it's just demoralizing. Good things out here are so expensive.
I know. So it's like a dream. It's a dream. And it looks very bucolic in Waco. You know, they live out on a farm that they've renovated and their kids are adorable. It's all good, Leanne. It's all good. And so one of the things, they used to have a little retail store in Waco. And then now, because they're fixer uppers, they bought an old grain silo and warehouse in downtown Waco. And they've renovated this for her new retail store where she's going to sell all her little cute items, the baskets, you know, the candlesticks, the cake stands, you name it, all the cute stuff that she has on the show. So this Magnolia Mart opened this year, and I've been wanting to go since then, but you know, I tried to lure you into it. But I have my buddy, Anne, we went there. Okay. So this grain silo is on, it seems like the area of downtown Waco that could use a little renovation. You know, it's all sort of abandoned parking lots. There's not much going on down there, but the grain silo. So we pull up in front of Magnolia Mart, and Leanne, it was about 9:30. The store opened at 9. We got on the road. We were there by 9:30. There must have been 1,000 people in the store. 1,000 people, Leanne.
Literally 1,000 people?
Literally. It's a big place, and it was completely jammed. But it's a whole happening, because in addition to the warehouse that you can go in and shop in, they have a big lawn and they have beanbag games out there for kids and lawn chairs and picnic tables, and they have food trucks there. So people, you can go, it's like a whole destination, and not just to shop there, but you can go and just experience the life of the fixer-upper. So 1,000 people were in that store, and that might be a little off-putting, but I'm telling you, here's the thing, Leanne, it's Texas. And so people are very nice in there. So there wasn't any pushing or shoving or grabbing. People were just sort of milling around, looking at stuff. And then again, because you haven't seen the show, but you have to believe me, everyone is super, super nice on the show. That's who they've hired to work in this store. So it's all just incredibly nice people helping you, smiling at you, you know, talking to you. So the whole experience, even though it's jammed with people, it was totally lovely. And she has nice little housewares. I didn't think they were overpriced. I bought a little, I had to buy something.
Right. You know, if you have a thousand.
You have to.
Yeah.
But I bought a little flower vase for $10, and I am sure she could have charged $18 for it, but she didn't. She charged 10 because it's Waco land.
Any Chip and Joanna sightings?
No Chip and Joanna sightings. So, and they're building something else on the site as well, another whole pavilion. But I don't know what's going on there. So I'll have to get to the detail of there. And a bakery. They are opening a bakery on this same site.
Okay.
Which I'm sure would only draw even another 1,000 people. So I don't know if they've been given the key to the city of Waco, but
it sounds like they have.
They are an economy in and of themselves, because, and it's just, you know, there's a guest book there. People are coming from all over the country to come to the Magnolia Mart and just be one with the spirit of Chip and Joanna Gaines and the Fixer Upper. So you got to do that on your trip. But Leanne, that was only the start. As I said, my friend Anne likes to research places to go, and she knows a lot about Texas because she grew up here. So our second stop, you probably didn't know this, but do you know that they have the prototype for the Brooklyn Bridge is in Waco, Texas?
I did not know that, Julie. Yes,
it is the Waco Suspension Bridge, which is the oldest and longest suspension bridge west of the Mississippi, is in Waco, Texas, right over the Brazos River. So, and it was built by the Roebling brothers, the same ones that built the Brooklyn Bridge. They built a bridge in Waco so the cattle could cross the river. How about that? So now that was good times, Leanne. Okay. Now, you're not going to get that on any tour.
No.
So you see how this tour was just building and building.
It's coming to life.
Celebrity, you know, we didn't see any celebrities, but we went to the Magnolia Mart. Then we did the Waco Suspension Bridge. We stopped at the lovely farmer's market in Waco, again, along the river. You know, it was just great. They've got a big, strong organic movement going on there. Everybody was selling organic stuff. So that was good. And then for, you know, our grand finale, Anne had found out about a place north of Waco called the Homestead Heritage. And this is a 500-acre-plus farm area north of Waco. And it was it's run by a religious community. This is a religious community that started in New York City 20 years ago. And then they moved to Waco, Texas. And they're a combination evangelical Anabaptist kind of operation. I didn't know what Anabaptist was because I did some research on this religious community, but that would be sort of the Amish or Mennonite, you know, tract within Christianity. So it's evangelical, Amish, Mennonite. So this community believes very strongly that you need to get back to the ways of like the 18th and 19th centuries. And they are very conservative. They have, you know, the women are all wearing long dresses and they got that hair thing going, you know, the hair, and the men have to wear long sleeve shirts, button down shirts, and they have to wear a certain kind of blue jeans. Okay. That's part of their, you know, they have certain requirements. They have electricity there. They have, you know, air conditioning in certain buildings. But they don't believe in tractors, okay? But to make lunch reservations, they do that on an iPad.
Okay.
So you have iPads, no tractors. Okay.
Okay. Right, I'm looking at the website now. It's a lot of, they have a lot of beliefs, I see.
Yes, they do, Lynn.
Fully thought out belief system.
Yes, this is, I mean, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say, you know, they're just, I'm not so Anne had heard about it, but this is they're into, I mean, when you go there, they have a little cafe. So, and I'll talk about that in a second, but then they have their own grist mill. They weave their own fabrics. They make their own furniture. They have a potter's barn. So it's, you know, they have their own herb garden. They've got hay rides. It's a very popular place. Approximately, according to their video, they have a little video you can watch when you go there. I mean, they have religious books around, but there's no religious indoctrination when you're there. I think that's important to say. They get about 60,000 visitors a year come to the Homestead Heritage, you know. But it is like stepping back in time, you know, sort of, you know, again, because they are very committed to, you know, sort of bringing back the simple crafts. So they have a blacksmith shop. You have weaving and spinning. They have a syrup mill, as I said, a grist mill, you know, so they're doing a lot of that. And then they have a cafe, and the cafe, Leanne, serves, you know, they have hamburgers and sandwiches, but everything, you know, this is the grass-fed beef, and they've made all the bread. They have their own cheese. They make all their own cheese.
Okay.
So Reuben. I had a Reuben, Leanne. It was a top 10 Reuben of my entire life.
Really? That doesn't seem like a... Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm surprised they would have a Reuben there.
I don't know. Okay. It's a very I said, what was the most popular sandwich? She said, the Reuben. People like our Reuben. So it was pretty good. So Abraham brought me the Reuben sandwich. That was delicious. So it's a juxtaposition. Right. That's all I'm saying is
from the blatant commercialism of Chip and Joanna's operation.
that was it. But this is sort of a left turn when you go there. Now, I don't want to say Branch Davidians, but I just did, didn't I?
Okay.
So they're not, but there's, I mean, you can look this group up. There have been some articles questioning what's going on, but they, you know, they have one guy in charge and he picks the elders and they have a lot of rules. But it seems to be working for this religious community, and the Reuben sandwiches are very good. So
let me look and see if that's part of their belief system. cured meats.
They cure their own. They told me.
I have no doubt from what you said. I mean, I have no doubt.
Yeah. So okay. It really was quite a day. You can see we had some very distinct and unique experiences. And like you've never been to a place. I don't think you've ever been to a place like this. And if I get you to take the side trip to Waco, we're doing this.
I went to Amish Acres in Indiana. I went there.
No, well, this is, I mean,
but
the
that was not okay.
That seems that, like
there were no Reuben sandwiches available.
This is Texas land.
Okay. And slightly suspicious is what you're saying.
Just saying there's been some articles about some of this stuff. Okay. So I don't know. I don't want to make any false claims because I can only present the facts, which was the Reuben was delicious and you would enjoy seeing the grist mill and everything else that they got going on there. So.
Right, 36 hours in Waco. Take that, New York Times.
I know you could. They would not have this on their list. I mean, that's what I mean. We went places. We did things. Other people don't go.
Well, Julie, that is. People have been wondering on the Satellite Sisters group page if you have been to Magnolia. So now you have. Yeah, did you take any photos?
But I have some photos. We can put some up. I will.
Yeah, put some up on the group page. People enjoy that. People enjoy that. All right. Excellent. Excellent report. Excellent report. All right, Julie. I have news of an international coalition I think we should join. I mean, we're not being solicited to join this particular international coalition, but I don't think that means we can't get on the bandwagon. And there are a couple reasons why. Now, I don't know if you know the story of the Parthenon marbles. You probably do. They're in the British Museum now.
I've seen them in the British Museum.
Right. Yeah. But that's only because 200 years ago, the British ambassador to the Ottoman Empire, he was a Scot named Lord Elgin, basically pointed at the marbles and said, "I want those." Ordered the friezes removed from the Parthenon in Greece and shipped them to England. Okay. And it's been a fight for 200 years to get them back. And so the British government was sort of pretending like, oh, it was really all of Lord Elgin's fault, but not so much. They never really gave them back. Once they got their hands on them, they were keeping them. And they sort of used the argument that, well, we're preserving them for all of humanity. These were not, sure, they were in Greece, but really they belong to all of humanity, and now they belong to us, the British.
They built a nice wing at the British Museum for it. So,
yes. So that, and for many years they used things like the air pollution, the unstable economy, all these reasons why they weren't going to give these marbles back. But now the Greeks themselves have built their own lovely museum on the Acropolis in Athens, where it's sitting empty, waiting for the marbles to come back. And, you know, there is a movement to sort of repatriate stolen artworks. And
which I totally agree with.
Totally agree with. So I feel like the 200th anniversary of stealing of the Elgin marbles is coming up. And Greece sees it as an opportunity to build an international coalition. So they've already tried like begging and pleading and rationalizing and sending attaches, and none of those have worked. So now they're going to try sort of a legal human rights angle. And then they're also going to appeal to the United Nations to put international pressure on the Brits to give back the marbles. And here's why I think we should get involved. First of all, it doesn't seem that controversial. We're not taking any strong political stands. Like, just give the marbles back. Okay, you've had them for 200 years. Give them back. They belong to Greece. They're part of Greece's culture. They're not part of the British culture. So give them back. That seems right. And then the other thing is, Julie, you know who one of the lawyers is involved in this new fight?
I'm just going to say, is it Amal Clooney?
It is Amal Clooney.
So okay. All right. I mean, if you were trying to get a high profile international lawyer, I would go to Amal. Okay. Whose side is she on?
Liam? She's on the side of the Greeks.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. She said, we have a very strong human rights case here. Of course you do, Amal. You always do. I heard her on NPR the other day about something else. I was like, I would have married her if I met her. My God, she sounds incredible. So let's do it. Let's just throw our hat in the ring with these people because it's now an international community. There's a group of Australians that are supporting this movement. And this is great because the Australians have a sense of humor. They put up a giant billboard next to the British Museum. And it's a picture of the Greek marbles. And then with strategically placed words over the private parts of the marbles, it says, "Give us our marbles back." Okay. Do you love the Australians?
I think the Australians have some other issues with the British Empire. Yeah. They're acting out, but that's pretty funny.
I think it would be funny if people.
I'm surprised, that Britain hasn't just stepped up and done that. Okay.
I am sort of surprised. Like, it does really seem like the right thing to do, and it's only going to look poorly if they don't give them back.
Right.
They've had them for 200 years. Enough is enough. You really just stole them, so give them back. And now that Amal Clooney is on the case,
yes.
Come on. So I feel like the Satellite Sisters can join this coalition, this international coalition, to bring back the Elgin Marbles.
Absolutely. Okay. Count us in, Leanne. Let's start a petition.
Okay. I don't even think we need to do that. I think we've declared it now, and I think we're good.
Okay.
We don't have to take out a billboard, but we could, because that's a funny one. All right. There you go.
Good, Leanne. Good. Well, Leanne, You know, I could talk about this next topic pretty much every single day, and I refrain from doing it just because I don't want to bore you to death. But there's a lot of grandmother news out and about, and I just wanted to mention it. Okay, so we don't, you know, maybe you think I talk about being a grandmother all the time, but
I don't, Julie. I don't.
Okay. Well, there was an interesting article in the New York Times by Dominique Browning. And she has a theory. I don't know how scientific it is, but I totally believe it's true. And that she believes that there is something called the grandmother hormone. Now, as you know, hormones have ruled our lives, throughout, you know, since the time you're a young girl, you know, you are being thrown about by your hormones, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, and even in your later years, you know, it's those, the diminishing hormones that are throwing you for a loop. But she really believes that, you know, being a grandmother and experiencing, you know, holding that little baby, your grandchild in your arms, it is that there is so much joy and bliss associated with holding a newborn that it releases a special category of hormones that would be the grandmother hormone. So on one side, it is this rush of like positive joy and bliss. But at the same time, there is an equally strong rush of worry that comes out when you're the grandmother, because you are well aware of all the things that could happen to that baby, both, you know, positive and negative. So it is a double whammy, she says. That's what Dominique Browning says. It's a double whammy of emotion that when you find out, when you become a grandmother. And I've said that, Leanne. I know if you go back into our archives and I talk about becoming a grandmother, holding my oldest granddaughter, Alice, for the first time, that deep sense of connection that was so unexpected for me, you know, that I just didn't imagine being connected to that child in a way that you are. So I don't know if there's any theory, scientific theory behind Dominique Browning's idea of the grandmother hormones, but I think it's totally accurate. So I just wanted to mention that. Secondly, I don't know if you've seen this, but Leslie Stahl of CBS News and 60 Minutes is out with a new book, and it's called Becoming Grandma: the joys of being a new grandparent, and that she's a grandmother, and that she, you know, is really relishing in that role. She writes that she in particular, because she worked so hard when her own daughter was growing up. I mean, as a CBS correspondent, she was away, and a 60 Minutes correspondent, she was away a great deal of, you know, the time when her daughter was growing up. She really relishes that she can spend all this time with her granddaughters. You know, she doesn't say it's payback, but she definitely wants to take advantage of all of that. And so she's written a new book that is both a combination of a memoir and also sort of some science associated with, you know, babies and grandparents and things. So the reviews are very good about it, but, you know, it is, you know, the internet, there are a lot of, can you hear my dog snoring in the
background? I can hear your dog snoring. I mean, I heard that snore. Yeah, that was quite a,
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Okay, oh, can yeah, I go? Now he's really going.
He's working up, but he needs some one of those like those nasal strips. Yeah. Yeah, he does. I'm sorry. But I think he finds my voice when I do a podcast very relaxing.
Apparently.
I just woke him a little. Anyway, but you know, on the internet, she's getting very good reviews. But a lot of people are saying, well, you know, she's a very privileged grandmother, but, you know, and that many people at different socioeconomic levels, you know, they're finding that they're not the part-time grandmother. They're a full-time grandmother that is, you know, that is raising another, you know, their children's child, and this does happen. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting book, and it may assist other grandmothers and grandmothers to be. That's all.
Well,
I
both
say.
Conversations are legitimate.
Yes, I totally think they're legitimate. I totally think, and I don't think it was Leslie Stahl's intention to, you know, to disavow that.
No, but I'm sure not.
She can only write about her experience, and and that's that. So anyway, so you might want to check it out. The name of her book again is Becoming Grandma.
Okay. So there's your grandmother pod. That's it.
That's my grandmother pod, Lynn.
Got anything else, Grammy? Okay. Speaking of grandmothers, I had to send a blow by blow of how to teach my mother-in-law to find closed captioning on her television. So I did that this week.
Well, that seems like quite a Mother's Day gift.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very nice, Liam.
But she was saying how much she liked movies with subtitles because she could read the words and she has some hearing issues. I was like, well, just use closed captioning on the television, like many Satellite Sisters listeners claim they do watching Poldark. She was like, really? How do I do that? So I figured it out for her. There you go. All right. I have some tidbits, Julie. Oh, this is sort of in the closed captioning area. Passwords. You know how we're always talking about passwords and we can't remember our passwords and this password and that password, right? We've talked about passwords a lot on Satellite Sisters. So I saw this tip at USA Today from a couple of engineers, software engineers, how they do their passwords. And I think it's literally brilliant. They said the key to passwords is not capitals and numbers and this and that. It's making them really long. So they suggested just finding one sentence and using it for every password. A sentence like, I love visiting satellitesisters.com. I love visiting Amazon.
Save the Elgin marbles.
Yeah. The idea is that you use the same sentence and then you include the name of the website in the sentence. So it's, my favorite website is Amazon. My favorite website is Goodreads. You just use that sentence and adapt it for the website you're on. And then if you want to make it more complicated, instead of using the Y's, you can type an exclamation point or something like that. But just the sentence stays the same, just very slightly based on the website. I thought that was a pretty good tip.
I think that is a good tip. Like, I could almost remember that. Like,
right. That's the idea.
Because I think they realized that most people can only remember one password, right? This is it, right?
And it's not the same password for every site because you change it based on the site. So there you go. So I just wanted to pass that along because I thought that was pretty good.
All right, Leanne, I like that.
Okay, my second tidbit.
Good tidbit. Good tidbit.
Is just Prince Harry this week in the United States for the Invictus Games, which has become sort of his personal mission, getting wounded warriors back into athletic action and creating these Olympic-like games. I believe he is just killing it here in the United States. He has really turned himself around, as our mother would have said. Hasn't he, Julie?
Yeah, that he's not hanging out in the nude in Las Vegas.
Yes.
No more of those shots.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, he's just killing it. I mean, he's adorable. So Prince Harry, way to go. You're doing a very fine job there. You found a very nice role for yourself. So if you add giving back the Parthenon marbles to your resume, I think you'd really...
He could join that international coalition. Don't you think it's about time? How old is that guy now?
It is about time. I don't know.
It is about time for him to shape up. I mean, that's, he's been like the playboy of the Western world for long enough, you know, so he should get a little more serious with his life.
Yes. So, and he's doing that and he seems to be in a groove. Good work, Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then finally in my tidbits, Julie, steak, because who doesn't love a steak tidbit? Okay.
That's really my favorite way to have steak, Leanne.
Love them. Don't you, little tidbits?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, It is barbecue season, and there are a lot of myths out there about steaks and barbecuing, many of which apparently I've fallen prey to. So it was clarified in this column from Cooking Light magazine by Chef Kenji Lopez-Altier. And here's what he writes.
You really did some research for this show, Lee, and I'm very impressed.
Okay. I've got sources, Julie. I've got a lot of sources. I'm surrounded by sources. But all right. You know, there's that rumor that you're supposed to take a steak out and bring it to room temperature.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Okay? Totally not true. You don't have to do that.
No, I thought the meat was supposed to seize up, you know, if it went from chili steak to the hot grill. No. It would seize up. No?
Here's the problem. You would have to take it out like hours and hours and hours ahead of time. Like he actually did the testing. And if you leave it out, you know, pull it out of the fridge for 2 hours, it only goes up 10 degrees.
Uh-huh.
So you're not really doing that much to it. He said, but here are a couple of things that are important. Seasoning before you put on the grill, very important. So if you can pull the steak out and salt it 40 minutes before, and then the key is not warming up the steak, but drying the steak.
Uh-huh.
That's how you get the good char. So you pull it out, you salt it. That makes the, you know, the salt pulls the moisture out and then the steak sucks it back in. I think that's the technical term. Sucks it back in. And then you just pat it off with a, you know, a paper towel.
That's what Julia Child used to always do too, Lian.
And there you go. Yep. And you know what? I also believe the myth that you should only flip it once. But no, he says, no, actually flipping multiple times results in a more evenly cooked meat with a better crust. So there you go.
Those are some tidbits about tidbits, Lian.
Exactly, Julie. Exactly.
Wow.
I think, whoo.
Well, Memorial Day.
We still have more show. And
that's very timely information. Memorial Day is coming up.
Yes.
People may be grilling some beef, and now they're ready to go. Yes,
exactly. A couple things before we do, Outlander. I just wanted to mention, if you haven't heard our interview with Phil Knight, Liz and I taped that this week, this former CEO, the founder of Nike. He's now the chairman of the board, and his new memoir is called Shoe Dog. And Liz and I had a chance to talk to him. We both worked for him. So that's why it was both nerve-wracking and exciting to talk to Phil. We only had 20 minutes with him, so we had to cram a lot of stuff in there. But it was really, really great to talk to him again. And that podcast posted this weekend. Even if you have someone in your life who's an entrepreneur or into business, it's not you, feel free to forward that podcast along, because he really says a lot of interesting things in it. And mainly what he says, Julie, is we got what a lot of other business reporters didn't get, that it was the culture at Nike.
I know, Lian, it was a very good review. Your interview was very good because you were able to talk about the culture of the organization, and it got him to talk about that.
Right.
Now, he did offer you jobs. That's he wants you to come back, which made me a little worried that you weren't going to be doing the podcast because you were heading back to Beaverton, Oregon there.
I texted my husband and his response was Beaverton or bust. I mean, so we'll see. No, it was really fun to talk to him again. And I get just noted the passage of time. I mean, I told a story on the air about, you know, working with him when the new world headquarters opened. Then I realized that was 1990. That is a long time ago, Julie.
I know.
I was very young. That was the point of that story, but I don't know how I got to be this age, but it was fantastic to talk to him. So that is available at satellitesisters.com. We would love for you to share that with people in your life that might be interested in that. And then this weekend, I'm going to be at the Literary Guild of Orange County, the Festival of Women Authors. So,
Lian, that sounds excellent.
I am doing the keynote address for 400 eager readers. So, I'm looking forward to that. Now, I just have to figure out what I'm going to say. It's all good.
I'm sure it will be inspiring, Lian. It will come to you. It will come to you on the 405.
It's exactly right, Julie. That's exactly right. All right. We do have to do a little Outlander commentary before we get to Madam Secretary. Julie, here's what would be my commentary. Creepy, 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 annoying and creepy. That's my
I wrote down three pieces of notes, which was blah, 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 blah. Jack is back and a duel. I think we're having the same reaction.
I know.
It was a little like, I just don't care about that storyline in France. I don't know. I don't care. I mean, about that king. None of it. So there's a lot of talk there. And I don't think that's what that Jamie is not. That's not his strong suit. His strong suit is dueling and it's wearing kilts and ripping off his shirt. Okay. That's what we want to see more of. Okay.
I know. I mean, I did think he had some great hair and great kilts in this particular episode.
Yeah.
I thought his personal grooming was excellent. Mm-hmm. I thought that dress she was wearing, the brown dress with the peonies, was it a couch? Was it a dress? Was it a settee? Or was it curtains? I don't know, Julie, but it was pretty spectacular. Okay.
Yes, it was. It was.
But this is where the time travel becomes ridiculous. And I was feeling your pain because Claire is now trying to prevent the death of the world's most awful human being, Jack Randall, so that her not that awesome husband can be born 200 years later.
Right.
Which really puts Jamie in a very understanding spot.
I mean, he's being very understanding because that is hard to understand. That's it. So
yeah. I don't know. I think a Jamie in the hand is worth two Franks in the bush, but that's what I would say.
And a duel. I was like, finally, we're going to get back to some action.
Yeah.
I guess it's against the law in France to have a duel. So now we have to wait a year for the duel. So I don't know, Leanne. I think it's lost a little of its steam, its mojo, and it's just not. I'm not as excited about Outlander as I was last year.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, when the highlight are the fashions and that overhead shot of the French garden, which was a spectacular shot. I actually paused that to take a look at that garden. Right. That was absolutely beautiful. But yeah, I mean, it's lost steam. It's lost the steaminess. We need some more steaminess.
We need more, just more bodice ripping. Come on. Come on. I mean, I'm at a point where I wouldn't last season. I was recommending it to people. I wouldn't recommend people jumping into this now.
Okay. So, all right. Okay. Yep, so we'll have to see. But again, Jamie is a good man. I would not let him go, Claire. I would not
Claire,
let him go.
You are crazy, Claire. Crazy. I know. You are crazy.
Crazy, Claire. All right. We're the Satellite Sisters. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with our final recap of Madam Secretary's second season. So stay with us. We're going to take a break. We'll be back.
This podcast is brought to you by You're the Best, a celebration of friendship. A collection of essays about the importance of female friendships in our lives by the Satellite Sisters. It's the perfect thank you gift for all the springtime celebrations, from showers to reunions to Mother's Day. Tell the Satellite Sisters in your life, you're the best. Available at Amazon or wherever books are sold.
Satellite Sisters. I'm Leanne Dolan in Pasadena, California. I'm here with my sister Julie Dolan in Dallas, Texas. And Julie, it was the season 2 finale of Madam Secretary this week, episode 23 of season 2. It was Veritas, which I have to tell you, I spent quite a long time on the Latin to English translation websites today to find out what was the translation of that word. And I was coming up with nothing.
I got Leanne because it kept coming up Veritas for me.
Yeah,
so I could not. It's a mystery. There are several mysteries in this episode, and the title, the significance of that title, I don't know what it was.
If any member of the production team is listening, I mean, it's not Veritas is truth, but this was Veritas, which would only come from the root of variety, varied, that kind of thing. So I guess what they're saying is hodgepodge. I mean, Tidbits. Wackadoodles. But other than that, it was an absolute top episode. Loved it. First of all, I loved that, you know, our girl Bess did not have to solve a super dramatic world crisis in 60 minutes. No one got blown up this week. It was just drama. It was character building. We revealed a lot of details about certain characters. It was a relatively happy ending with a real twist at the end. And that was great. And it was written by Barbara Hall. She's the showrunner. She was a guest on Satellite Sisters a couple months months ago, and you could just feel it was in the zone. It was smart and funny and satisfying. And Julie, Henry is back in the kitchen where he belongs.
Really. Thank goodness. That's what I was saying too. He was fixing the waffle iron. He was playing mini golf and working on that fire pit. I felt much more reassured that he was in the role that he was playing this week than he's been previous weeks. Like when he was running around in Islamabad, you know, with a non-secure cell phone. That was really upsetting me.
Liz, you know, we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do. because there are just so many fun things to frame, Leon, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing to get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah. Any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leon, they have already frame-bridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift-giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but Framebridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds
like... But you aren't going to be happy, okay? That's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or see a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's framebridge.com. Thanks, Framebridge.
Hi.
Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life, aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the mega moisture duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer, and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria algae body oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria collagen body oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz. Your youthful glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
So here's some personal highlights before we get to the storylines. Okay, mm-hmm. Henry proposed to Bess in skywriting. How great was that?
I know.
All right. The fam loves mini golf. I mean, who doesn't love mini golf?
Yes, it's a great sport, Leanne. It really is.
It is. And all right, Bess took that layered look to new heights, Julie, or should I say depths? What was that jogging construction she was wearing?
This was another area, again, where I was doing some deep research, Leanne, and coming up blank. Why was she wearing a Carolina Panthers sweatshirt? I did not see that connection because Bess went to the University of Virginia. She grew up in the Washington area, so she would naturally be a Washington Redskins fan. She wouldn't be a Carolina Panthers fan.
Was that the Heist the Quaker? Would they have been the Panthers?
No, that look, I think, well, that looked like a Carolina Panthers sweatshirt. Okay. So again, I didn't understand the title, and I didn't understand why she was wearing that sweatshirt.
All right, but weren't you happy to see those fur hooded $1 million puffer coats come back, Julie?
Yes, Leanne. I am so glad at a moment's notice they can get to some far off region and show up in the matching puffer coats. That was excellent.
Just Henry with the fur. He looked like a, you know, some sort of Russian heroine there.
I just couldn't understand. Like, okay, so it's so warm and sunny in D.C. that they're playing mini golf, but then they go to Finland and they've got to go, you know, in their
Anna Karenina, Julie Christie shows up to the hostage exchange. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Oh, hats off to the fur hoodie puffer coats.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So here are the three storylines. Okay. Storyline one, Bess does a great job, thinks she's losing her job, demands to know if she's losing her job, and gets an unexpected job offer. Mm-hmm. Storyline two, Dimitri returns, Bess negotiates the swap of a lifetime from the moral high ground. Unbelievable. And storyline three, Stevie makes a good life choice.
So, finally, yes.
All right, so let's take those in reverse order. Let's start with Stevie. Stevie gets an unexpected proposal from Jareth, the British, as we know now, physics student. Did you know he was studying physics?
No, I thought he was in politics because he was at Georgetown. But maybe he's a double major. Anyway,
I thought they said he was going to do a two-year thing at Oxford in physics.
I didn't hear that. I heard Oxford two-year fellowship. Okay. Okay. Again, that's another mystery. That's our third question so far. We watched this show twice, at least, Leanne, right?
I know.
So that's so Jared's moving back. He's going to Oxford. And he pops the question. That was sort of, well, first to Henry, right?
Right. And Henry is stunned. He's on the mini golf course. It's not the best time in the world to ask for a woman's hand in marriage of his father. But I have to admit, Henry was stunned, but he and Bess did some excellent underparenting. They did not try to convince her it was the wrong thing to do. They wanted to, but they did not do it. Julie, what would you have done if that had been your Stevie?
I just screamed and said no. I mean, she's like a sophomore in college, right?
Yeah. Or, I mean, she's taken some time off, but she couldn't be more than 21.
She couldn't be more than 21. Yeah. She's pretty young. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think you would have to hope for the super long engagement, okay? Like, okay, get engaged, but then take 2 years or 3 years. Yeah, I guess. So I understood Bess and Henry that was a solid opening position for them to have,
you know,
not to overreact, but not the fact that they were going to get married next week. Right.
And she was almost swayed. I think she looked awesome in that hippie white wedding dress.
Didn't like that at all, Leanne. Didn't like that at all.
She's only 20. So she's not going to go to Kleinfeld's or whatever that store is.
Again, I was having a hard time with the season. Like, okay, it looks like springtime in Washington and you're in a summer dress. I didn't like it at all.
And
I didn't
her think her sister was advocating the loose bun updo, which would have looked beautiful.
That would have looked nice.
And Jareth was promising those craft beers and small batch cocktails. And those are hard to say no to.
Yes, they are. Yeah, they are.
but they managed to sway Stevie without swaying Stevie. She came to the conclusion on her own that she was too young to get married, that this was the forever guy, but she didn't want forever to start next week, which I thought was a good line, a great line. There's still something about that British guy that's just too perfect for me.
You don't trust him, Leanne?
Well, especially when I found out he was allegedly a physics student.
Okay. We're going to get back to you on
that. I got
to
get some confirmation.
I think Jareth is fine. I think he's good. And that could be a nice opening that we're seeing a lot of scenes of Stevie. She needs to do something a little more than just the dishes and drinking orange juice in the kitchen.
Liked when she was with the bad boys. I don't know. He's not edgy enough for me. I don't know. I think I like her character because I think it's real for a 20-year-old girl to make terrible choices about men.
Yes.
So I like that character. Okay. All right. Then the second storyline, Dimitri, that was a feel-good moment, tears. It was pretty emotional. Character I liked. You know, he was the young Russian army officer that Henry recruited. And then Bess and the president completely double-crossed in Russia there and kind of traded him away to sign a deal with the Russians, much to Henry's chagrin. And so now Bess is trying to make all things right, and the Russians have proposed this agent swap. They want the most notorious U.S. double agent ever, Buckley, to be released, and Bess wants Dimitri to be the swap. The storyline has been building for 2 weeks. So this time Bess wants some pollings to see how this could go, because this is the equivalent of what, like, you know, he's like an Edward Snowden type.
Yeah.
The Buckley in jail here in America has, you know, double crossed the CIA, had agents killed, but we learn he's been in jail for 20 years. Maybe he's fallen out of the public memory. Maybe he's not the worst guy ever. And she kind of shames the president into doing the right thing. What'd you think of that?
Well, I didn't believe her argument. I still don't think that as an asset that it was worth it to take Dimitri. But it was, I was listening to it. I think she was real. I really didn't agree with Bess. I mean, sometimes she goes off the deep end on things. And this, I felt like she was really hurt because of her personal situation, because her husband was freaking out and going crazy. She wanted to make sure this got done. This would not have been on her radar screen. You know, she would have been done with this the Dimitri chapter, had it not been for Henry. So I think she let her personal life influence public policy.
She claimed that his intel stopped World War III. That was her
argument. Well, I think that is true. I mean, it really did help. So that was really true.
And she played on the president's, you know, guilt, essentially. They did trade this guy's life for the deal.
Yeah.
So team furry pufferheads, they go to the far north for the swap. And there's this dramatic moment because they don't know. Bess has seen pictures that Dimitri's dead, but the Russians insist he's alive. They need to take Henry so he can ID Dimitri. And they send false Dimitri.
They send false Dimitri, which is just hilarious.
There's a character from Russian history called False Dimitri. That's an actual. They send False Dimitri out, and Henry shakes his puffy hooded furry head, and no, not Dimitri. And then the real Dimitri gets out, and he's in bad shape.
Yeah,
and he sort of lurches forward towards Henry, and first he spits at Henry's feet, and then they hug it out.
Yeah. Then they hug it out. I mean, you can understand. I mean, he's a good character.
Yes.
And the actor who plays that character is doing it. We've always felt very connected to him emotionally. And you can understand he would have really mixed emotions. Like, obviously, he's been tortured, but he doesn't really want to live in the U.S. He just wanted to stay in Russia and be a good Russian soldier.
Right.
And I'm sure he regrets ever getting involved with the Americans.
And they sort of dropped the sister. At one point, Bess was trying to get the sister out. And then all of a sudden, it's all about Dimitri. So we don't know what happened to the sister. Maybe next year she'll be back as a storyline. So, but for the moment, Henry's soul is healed again. And he's got a fur hood on. So
that was good. And he doesn't have to go back to the marriage counselor.
No, he's never going back.
He's not doing that. So that's not happening.
Just build the fire pit, Henry.
And they can wear their puffer coats out in the backyard. That's it.
All right. But then the big twist is Vice President Bess. Okay. So the Secretary of State, she believes she's being undermined and her job is in trouble. And she knows this because Politico obnoxious dog lover Mike B tells her so. Okay. This is her.
I like that character.
I like him too. You know, I feel like he's a little aggressive with insisting his dog be everywhere.
Yes.
So. But yeah, he has all these secret intel. This is her personal consultant, and she always clears the room when he's there. And there's a lot of tension between he and Nadine. But now I would say there's a lot of sexual tension. Don't you think there was something happening between those two on the tatami mat?
Yes, sparks, Leanne.
Yeah. That's good, because yeah. It would be good if she, you know, Nadine had a bigger
I would like Nadine to have a little boyfriend. That would be good.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I don't think she likes dogs, though, so it could be a problem. You've seen Nadine's apartment. There's no room for that sheepdog in that apartment.
That's true. Hurting her ancient artifacts. Yeah, that would be bad. Okay, so, but Mike B tells her, oh, bad news, you know, they're vetting a couple of candidates for your job. Word on the street is that you're out. And here's the ultimate proof that one of them has agreed to take it. You know, the wife has put a 6-month old on the wait list for an exclusive Washington preschool. I thought that was a good detail. Like
that was a good
proof.
Detail. Yeah. And the way Bess played it was great. You could just see the sinking feeling on her face. She didn't want to believe it. It seemed like a preposterous thing to begin with. And then it really, you know, it really sunk in. And that anyone who's ever faced a turnaround or, you know, something like that has happened at work where things haven't gone well, you know that feeling. And that she did a great job with that.
Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank Prose for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from Prose is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that Prose hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, Prose is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, Pros, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. Prose isn't just better for you, it's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So, Prose, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, Prose. Prose is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at prose.com/sisters. And Prose is spelled P-R-O-S-E. Prose.com/sisters. Thanks, Prose. Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox.
Storms into Russell's office. Like, she's going in. Cancel my meetings. Going in. And Russell's like, whoa, what is this? When it's on the other foot, it's not so great. But he doesn't deny it. Kind of hangs his head and says, nope, that's, you'll need to talk to the president about this. So then she goes to talk to the president. And what does the president do, Julie?
It was a total surprise because she's going to be really mad at the president. You know, she's saying, I did all these things. I helped you in all these situations with the Cubans, with the Russians. Well, he offers her the job of vice president. He needs her as his vice president.
No one else he'd rather have because she's attractive. She's polling well and she gets stuff done.
Yeah. So what did you think, Lynn? Did you see that coming? I had no idea.
I think we predicted it last week. If you remember, I suggested that may be one way because we've known all season long that he's going to be running for re-election. So that was out there. So so I suggested it last week as one possible thing. Here's the thing. I hope she doesn't take it. Right?
It's a terrible job. Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you don't. I mean, there, first of all, there is already a TV show called Veep.
Right.
So that would be a problem. A little problem.
Right.
Okay. But it's not a good position, Leon, as you know, you don't get to do anything.
Right. And for us as viewers, it's much more exciting to have, you know, her flying off to Kosovo to do stuff than going to a breakfast in Iowa. I mean, that's not a dramatic storyline. When the show comes back in October, we will have been at the tail end of our election cycle. And I don't think anyone wants to see Bess on the stump. I don't think we're going to be able to take it.
Oh, please.
I
think that's it, Leanne, right there. Yes, that is it. Yeah, if this is about an election, nobody's going to watch that show.
I mean, it's just we had it on The Good Wife this year as a storyline. Like, the husband was running for president. We've got Veep. No one wants to see Bess at a pancake breakfast anywhere in America. We want to see her off doing a little spy craft and wearing those suits that are, you know, vice president can't get away with. She would have to wear dresses all the time. You know, even those good-looking pants she wears. She wouldn't be able to wear that if she was running.
That's right. She would have to give up those little shorty jackets that I like and you don't. Yeah. So they'd be gone.
She couldn't do it. The headband would have to be gone. It would all be bad for Bess. So here's what I predict. Well, do you have a prediction? Let me hear it.
My prediction is she's going to turn it down. That's what I think.
Turn it down? If the president asks you, what's the protocol? Do you know, Julie, have you ever been in that position?
I have not been asked to be vice president. It's shocking, I know, but I haven't.
Okay.
I don't think she's going to end up in that job because I don't think I think she likes being Madam Secretary. The thought that she was going to lose that job, she said to Henry, you know, I don't think I've ever said how much I like this job.
Yeah.
So
I know that was nice. It's nice.
She's going to use her persuasive skills. She's going to find someone else to be vice president. That's what I think.
Henry.
No, not Henry.
Here's what I think. I think there's going to be some sort of crisis in the world before she has to give her answer, and that will make it impossible for her to leave the Secretary of State job.
I hope so.
You know who I think it's going to be, Julie? What country was conspicuously left out this year? Think about the conversation we had with showrunner Barbara Hall.
I don't know, Leanne. What?
North Korea.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Right?
Okay, yes,
remember you suggested a North Korea storyline? And that's like the only hot spot in the world that hasn't been an issue.
Yes.
So that is my prediction, that there's going to be some situation with North Korea that, you know, forces Bess to stay mercifully in the Secretary of State role. That's
what
I think.
And she will definitely need her puffer coat for North Korea. So it's all good, Leanne.
Yes. Yes. Okay, that's our prediction. You can always go to the Satellite Sister Facebook group and leave your prediction on what's going to happen. But a 100% completely satisfying season finale, I thought.
Yes, it was terrific. Absolutely terrific.
Any other notes you have? Any other fashion
notes?
No,
I did want to mention, because I love the graduation speech UMass Pittsfield.
Yes.
Of course, the first Madam Secretary was scheduled, you know, and I like that she just accepted the first invitation that she received to speak at graduation, and it was from UMass Pittsfield, which I think we could understand was probably not a top tier school. But anyway, she couldn't go. So she sent her speechwriter, and he gave a great speech, didn't he, Leon? I mean, he started off, you know, you weren't sure whether or not he was going to be able to pull it off, but he gave a great speech about how some people are always seeking the limelight, but a lot of people work really hard in the dark, and he's one of the, I'm paraphrasing his.
It was a writer's speech. That's why, yes, I like that Barbara Hall wrote it. Like, at the end of the episode, the writer was the hero. So that's. Yeah. Of course, as a writer, you're going to love when a writer gets to be the hero. So, yeah, totally great. Yes, Matt, that was a great speech.
Matt
that was,
pulled it out. Yes. I mean, and nice, he won people over, and he had just a, you know, he had a great theme and a big message, and it was very inspirational.
And we had that nice juxtaposition with, you know, it's the people you don't see out of the limelight doing a lot of good work, and then we have Dimitri, you know, the exchange with Dimitri. Yeah, that was a really nice moment. I had that on a separate page of notes, but yeah, fantastic. I'm glad you mentioned that. Excellent. Yeah. And in another freakish turn of events here in California, Madeleine Albright, like, is being rejected by the women of Scripps College. Like, they don't want her to be the commencement speaker.
Okay. Really? That's a whole nother podcast.
It's a whole nother podcast.
That's another whole nother.
But there you go. These controversial commencement speakers. So Matt really shined. Matt, I'm sure he'll be available for other commencement addresses in the future.
Okay.
All right. Anything else, Jewel?
That's it, Leanne. That's it.
All right, Madam Secretary, go take the summer off. You've done a fine, fine job, and we will see you in the fall. It is coming back for season 3, so we'll see where Bess ends up in the fall. We're the Satellite Sisters. You can find lots of different Satellite Sisters episodes at iTunes, or you can subscribe through a podcast app. You can find us at satellitesisters.com. We recently posted an interview with Nike CEO Phil Knight, so we would love for you to take a listen to that. You can find us on Facebook, both at the Satellite Sisters, and join our group page. We do a lot of fun discussions over there that are led by you, the Satellite Sisterhood. Julie, have a fantastic week.
You too, Leanne. And don't forget, call your satellite sister.